discussing the beginning of a multi-part series at CBSSports.com based off of an anonymous survey given to college football coaches. The first installment was about the perceived level of cheating around the country. And here comes Dennis Dodd from CBSSports.com to join us to break it all down.
Snitch!
There's Brian. Hey, Dennis, how are you?
I'm good. I knew I'd hear that. That would be the wake-up call. I knew it.
Dennis, I'm going to see you Monday, right? We have some shows to put in the can over at CBS Sports Network.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Cool. As far as these coaches who were speaking off the cuff, off the record, how prevalent do they think cheating still is in college football? Because I'm not surprised whatsoever.
Yeah. No. The overarching numbers said that 57% thought that it was 10% or less of schools really cheat the major stuff. You know, we stress that. Don't talk about secondary violations. This is Ole Miss level stuff. And so most of them don't think it goes on much, but the examples that we got were amazing. There's a coach out there who swears that this is 25 or 30 years ago, a school paid for a law student to complete school, get his degree, and get a job in NCAA enforcement so he can be a mole and report back on what's going on in NCAA enforcement.
Now, and that's a snitch.
I said, come on. No. He goes, I swear it's true. It happened.
Wow.
Okay. And I'd heard this from that coach before. It wasn't like he just brought it out of the blue. And I said, okay. So, no, there was other stuff. One coach said off the cuff, sort of, well, it's 80% in the SEC and 20% everywhere else. So, perpetuating a stereotype.
Yeah, right.
is it possible, Dennis, to win consistently without bending a couple of rules here and there? Can you be 100% clean and be 100% good?
I think you can because, you know, the NCAA requires you to send in a list of violations, self-reported violations every year. And it's not uncommon for schools to send in lists of hundreds. I think one year at Ohio State, in the midst of Tattoo Gate, that they sent in a list. The Columbus Dispatch got a list of 236 violations. Now, a lot of them were making a phone call to a recruit 5 minutes past the deadline or something like that. But, you know, the stuff that's thought out, the Sun Belt and Conference USA schools are not capable of $100 handshakes because those are two-star recruits. It's not worth it. Why do it? Everybody's playing by the same rules. But I think at the top level, it's a little more prevalent because of the stakes. You know, $4 million contracts, championships, filling 100,000-seat stadiums. So, yeah, I think it's a little bit more than 10% in the Power Five.
Wow, that's amazing. Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com, also CBS Sports Network. He has become a television guru as well over at CBS Sports Network. Let's talk about, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, the Kansas Jayhawks. you wrote that they're going to spend about $300 million in the next 3 to 5 years on football renovations. Is that all on the strength of knocking off my alma mater, Texas, last year?
Yeah, on the strength of beating one FBS team the last 2 years. No, this happened this summer. It's really, really weird how this happened. The AD, Shan Zenger, came to a rooftop bar reception for the football coach, David Beatty, at happy hour and announced this. This wasn't a press conference. This is a meet and greet, have some beers, and in Kansas City, and people lost their minds. Like, what are you talking about? Too many beers? No, this is $300 million in stadium renovation and an indoor over the next 3 to 5 years. The plans are supposed to come out in September. To me, this is an investment on just playing big-time football because whatever college football looks like in the next 10 years, at the top level, Kansas wants to be part of it. Whether we call it the Power Five, whatever, I think this sends that message. Nothing official, but Kansas, if you remember, in 2010 when Nebraska and Colorado left, the Big 12, there was a real possibility that Kansas, with a top five basketball team, would have been playing sports in the Mountain West or Big East, in the old Big East. It sponsored football. So that's what this is about.
Dennis Dodd of CBSSports.com and CBS Sports Network is with us here on Gio and Jones. I just saw that the second installment of this coach survey is up, Dennis, and it's about overrated and underrated head coaches. And I'm disappointed that half the field wouldn't answer the overrated coach question. Are they scared of anonymously telling you that Jim Harbaugh is not that good of a coach?
That was that was coaches, I guess, adhering to the code. They didn't want to rip their brethren. And, you know, when we got the questions, I wasn't surprised. I said, that's going to be a hard one. Underrated is going to be easy. Bill Snyder, what have you. But when you're asked to stay overrated, that's going to be tough. But we did get quite a few responses. We got a lot of Jim Harbaughs. We got some Lane Kiffins. In fact, I think Lane Kiffin tweeted last night or something. He reacted to the story and said, it's nice to be seen in good company.
They said Lane Kiffin was overrated?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, it's hard to believe, right?
Well, you look at his head coaching jobs, okay, but as an OC, I think that's you're hard-pressed to label him that.
I don't disagree. I mean, three straight SEC titles, three different quarterbacks, one of them a freshman SEC player of the year, another 50-year senior converted receiver running back, Blake Sims, who became Alabama's all-time total offense leader. I do not disagree.
And I don't know if I got your thoughts on the Hugh Freeze situation, because we were both down at SEC Media Days when all that stuff happened. One, your take on that deal with Houston. That now the lawsuit has been dismissed. It was in the wrong court, apparently, mm-hmm. And so it'll be refiled in the correct jurisdiction. And you also have about 10 to 15 realistic candidates to replace Hugh Freeze as well?
Yeah, it's totally up in the air right now, because I don't think you can really talk about viable candidates until we all dissect what the penalties are going to be, and it looks like this thing's going to be decided in November. Mm-hmm. The penalties are going to be handed out in November, in the middle of the season, so that, you know, obviously clears things up. But I think Matt Luke has the best chance for sitting coach, because he's going to be in that thing every day. He can show what he can do. And look, if he somehow goes 8-4, Shea Patterson's all in. He tweeted that the moment they self-imposed the bowl ban this year. The problem with that is, let's say Ole Miss is 4-5 at the beginning of November, and the seniors are sitting there going, what are we playing for? You know, we're going to the NFL or whatever. And the bottom falls out. But I think Matt Luke, I had Les Miles up there, maybe a bridge coach. If they really get slammed, you know, and the job is toxic, Les Miles would take it for, you know, 2 or 3 years to get it back on its feet, to do it. I think Butch Jones might be a viable candidate. I don't think he's a bad coach. And nothing is going to happen in that league until Jimmy Sexton says it does. He's the super agent who controls about half the coaches in that league.
What the hell are you doing?
What's that?
All that noise you're making.
I don't know.
Nothing. I don't know.
Like your dad just called you, dude. Nothing. That wasn't me.
Yeah. I'm just reading the magazine, Mom.
Boy, come out of that bathroom. Oh, man.
Only Brian Jones would ask that question.
Been there, done there.
Yesterday.
Oh, man.
All right. So, Dennis, did you have any problem with Josh Rosen this week?
No. I had talked to him last year. I talked to him this year. He'd said many of the same things. I think people lost their minds when he said football and school don't mix. I think you have to read what he said and read the context. What he means is, you know, he had a class. He's a finance major, so, you know, he's not sociology or kinesiology or communications. He's got a vision for his life. He was told last semester that he couldn't take that class, one of his classes required for his degree, because it overlapped 30 minutes with practice, and that really ticked him off. You know, really, I can't. You know, can't give me 30 minutes? No. So he took it in the summer. It was a six-week course. He has told me there are players sleeping in the facility because they, you know, they can't make rent some months, even with cost of attendance. And so that, you know, that's where he's coming from. And I believe him, and I think he makes some valid points. This goes on even at UCLA. A lot of programs where kids, look, it's, they're, we all know the deal, you know, majoring in football. We've heard that before, right? I think that still goes on, and I think that's what he's pointing out.
Hey, Dennis, Alabama, of course, people point out all the analysts that they have, analysts in quotes, because they have a pretty hefty staff there that helps that football program, not just those guys on the field. Now, TCU, they bring in Sonny Dykes, former Cal coach, of course, and he was let go, and he's an analyst for TCU. Are you gonna, you think we'll see more organizations, more teams go this route where they bring in former coaches and place that analyst tag on them, therefore they have more eyes and ears to help with the football program?
I do, because as Nick Saban has done, it hardly costs anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, if school is willing to do it, he's created, and I mean this in the best possible way, kind of a halfway house for fallen coaches. Mike Loxley, who was let go at New Mexico, is one of those guys now. He's co-offensive coordinator. We know about Steve Sarkisian. You know, Lane Kiffin has come in there. He wasn't an analyst, but he was hired after he'd been fired. And that's a great hire for Gary Patterson at TCU. Yeah. Sonny Dykes is a great offensive mind. And I know at least at Alabama, they're paying those analysts $28,000. So I imagine it can't be much more at TCU.
And that's a nice, that's the mailbox money, considering those, these fired coaches are still getting paid from their former employers.
Yeah, I'm sure Cal's paying him a nice hefty buyout, so he can afford the cost of living in Fort Worth. Yeah,
that's the American dream, huh? Have a nice job, get fired from it, still get paid, and just be able to do something for fun on the side mm-hmm. while you're getting those checks.
Absolutely.
That's amazing. Dennis, we've got to run. Thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Get back to doing whatever you were doing.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Lock the door behind you. Dennis Dodd. Read the as part two is up there now about candid coaches is the title, and overrated, underrated, most head coaches. It's at CBSSports.com. And, of course, you can apparently watch Dennis now at CBS Sports Network. I wonder if he's gotten his introductory Stepping Back DVD yet to be in line.
That's probably what he was taking. That's all the noise. He was taking it out of the package.
That's what he was doing.
That's it.
I'm going to hit play the second we hang up. things are busy the rest of the way here on Geo and Jones on this Thursday morning. We got a Brad Heller updated in just a second, which will include Anne Liguori once again live at the PGA Championship. Sean O'Hara is calling in as well, NFL Network analyst, longtime NFL offensive lineman. Actually, a really good guy to ask about the correct butt shape. Center should
True.
Have. I mean, he's
yeah.
he lived it. He lived
Did
that life.
You have
life.
The proper mm-hmm. derriere.
How's your surface area?
Yeah.
So we'll do all of that when we come back with you on Gio and Jones on CBS Sports Radio. Jones is here. Gio is not. Bogus in for Greg, who is back from vacation on Monday. NFL Network Sean O'Hara joins us in just a second. But first, he used to be the loser. Now I am, because Ack chose Mike over me. So here's just Brad Heller with your update. Hello, Brad.
Hello, guys. We'll start with Major League Baseball. Making 8 straight wins for the Boston Red Sox.
Line drive, left field, base hit. One run scores. And here's home being waved home. Here's the throw to the plate, and it's too late. 2 runs call. I'm home, and the Red Sox lead at 6-0.
That's Joe Castiglione, Red Sox Radio Network. Red Sox beat the Rays in St. Pete 8-2. Their lead in the American League East, still 4 games on the Yankees, who piled up 17 hits and an 11-5 win over the Blue Jays. The Indians acquiring outfielder Jay Bruce from the Mets for a minor league pitcher. Michael Brantley went on the DL with an ankle injury. That was after the Tribe lost in 12 innings to the Rockies in Cleveland 3-2. Charlie Blackmon had the game-winning home run. In St. Louis, a cat ran across the field, and it became a rally cat, because on the next pitch, Yadier Molina, a go-ahead grand slam. Cardinals won their 5th in a row, beating the Royals 8-5. St. Louis is just a game and a half out now in the Central behind the Cubs. Cubs lost to the Giants. The Brewers are also a game and a half out after getting shut out by the Twins. Deshaun Watson shined in his preseason debut, 15 of 25, 179 yards. He also ran for a touchdown. Texans lost to the Panthers 27-17.
That's always good, regardless if it's a scrimmage, practice, preseason, regular season game, whatever it is, if you get in that end zone, it's hard to do. So it's a good feeling.
And Christian McCaffrey's debut for Carolina, he carried the ball 7 times for 33 yards. The PGA Championship is underway. Time for a live update now from Quail Hollow. Good morning, Anne Liguori.
Good morning, Brad. And wow, Jordan Spieth, who recently turned 24, he's trying to become the youngest guy to win a career Grand Slam. He gets started in a few minutes, and he'll be playing with Masters champion Sergio Garcia and U.S. Open champ Brooks Koepka. Now, Spieth has been downplaying his expectations this week, saying that it's only been 2 weeks since he won the Open Championship, the third leg of the career Grand Slam. He's so happy about that that he really can't add pressure to his week. He's accomplished something so great this year, he says, that anything else that happens, he can accept. That takes the pressure and expectation away. Right now, Hideki Matsuyama, he started on the 10th. He birdied the first two holes, Brad, and after shooting that 61 in the final round last week to win the WGC Bridgestone Invitational, got to watch out for Hideki Matsuyama. Brad?
All right, Ann, thank you very much. PGA Championship underway at Quail Hollow. We'll be hearing from Ann all morning long, really all weekend long. Gentlemen.
That's Miss Ann to you.
Miss Ann Liguori, of course. Gentlemen, back to you.
All right, Brad, thanks so much. And again, Brad, Sean O'Hara, longtime NFL player, currently at the NFL Network, will join us here in just a second. I'm actually disappointed and somewhat impressed by Mother Nature this morning.
Why?
Brian. So I pull up here to the studio in Lower Manhattan. I open up my car door, and I'm immediately smacked in the face by this burning plastic smell. And okay. I think, oh, my God, what's wrong with my car? One time I got like a plastic bag. It got caught up underneath the car, and it burned and it stings. So I'm smelling underneath my car. Now, again, this is at 4:30 this morning, so it's pitch black dark. There's only me and weird characters on the street. I'm leaning in every wheel well smelling. And while I still smell it, it's not coming from my car. So I give up and I walk away and I turn the corner and I still smell it. So now I know it's not my car. So now I relax. But all of Lower Manhattan smells like burning plastic. I buy coffee from the same coffee cart in the morning. And I say, "What? Have you guys smell that? What's going on?" And guy's like, "Yeah, it's been like that since we got here an hour ago." So I finally see that the New York Police Department actually tweeted this, that, hey, if you're smelling smoke fire in New York City, it's coming from a fire in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
The smell is being swept across New Jersey into New York from some huge fire in Pennsylvania.
Okay, I'm not surprised.
I'm impressed, but you're not surprised that a fire in Pennsylvania is smellable across two states?
Man, you get enough breeze and it gets to blowing pretty hard. Yeah, can come all the way up here. What's an hour and a half down the road, isn't it?
I think it's a little farther than that. But, yeah, I mean, still, that's a lot. I don't smell delicious cheesesteak blowing in from Philadelphia.
Well, it's not they're not plumes of cheesesteak smoke, you know, bellowing from, what is it, Angelo's?
Pat's, Geno's.
Pat's, Geno's. Where did I get Angelo's from? Is there Angelo's cheese?
I'm sure there is.
Yeah, why not? There is now. You got Scott Servais, and we have Angelo's. There you go.
Well, but Angelo is the correct pronunciation of a name. You can call him.
Okay, Chauncey.
All right, we all make mistakes.
I don't.
Except you do. And then you say.
So anyway, I didn't have this problem when I got out of the car.
Because you take 3 steps from your car into the building.
Where'd you walk from?
Like 3 blocks away, where I can find free parking.
But everyone else confirmed your
everyone
your
has smelt it. Yeah, everyone has smelt it.
I did.
And it's coming from Pennsylvania. There's a whole other state between us and Pennsylvania. If I could smell a fire in Brooklyn across a river, I'd be surprised. I'm smelling a fire across New Jersey.
What was on fire in Pennsylvania?
I don't know, actually. Something that involves plastic. That's what it smells like to me, burning plastic, which is not a pleasant smell at any time of day.
No,
but
it's not.
At 4:30 in the morning, the pitch black dark, it's not helpful whatsoever.
No.
Not even remotely like that.
I'm in agreement with that.
855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Time before we're done to sneak in a couple of phone calls with you. Again, waiting on Sean O'Hara of the NFL Network to join us. Not sure if you saw this, Brian.
Is that what it was?
Excuse me, I'm like choking on the granola I shovel fed myself.
You did.
During my last break.
And you sound like a damn cow over here grazing. Got good to you, didn't it?
You'd think I'd be more of a professional by now, but I'm not. Later this month, MLB teams and players are wearing special jerseys. It, of course, is the normal money grab.
Don't mess with the pinstripes.
But they're putting nicknames on the back of guys, and they are messing with pinstripes, including putting last name. They're putting name on the back of jerseys. But the winner, the Mariners, Kyle Seager, his jersey is going to say Corey's brother. A stud Dodger shortstop. I think that's amazing.
Tip of the cap to his brother.
Why not?
Sean O'Hara would never do that.
I don't even know if Sean has a brother to do that.
If he had one, he wouldn't tip a cap to him.
We'll find out. Here is Sean, longtime NFL offensive lineman, NFL Network analyst right now, joining us here on Gio and Jones. Sean, I'm Andrew. That's Brian. What's going on, man? How are you?
Hey, good morning, boys. I got two brothers. So
see?
I didn't catch what you guys were saying, but brothers don't shake hands. Brothers got a hug.
Well, there you go.
I don't know if you saw that Major League Baseball is going to spend a weekend later this month, and they've let the players pick, like, nickname jerseys, so you can have your nickname on the back instead of your last name. Seager, who plays for Seattle, is going to have Corey's brother on the back of his jersey for a full weekend because his brother Corey is an awesome shortstop for the Dodgers.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I like that.
That's cool. You do that for your brother, right?
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
I like that. You know, it's funny because my dad used to always joke about how, he used to be, oh, yeah, you're David O'Hara's son. And then he's like, once you got the league, now he's like, I'm Sean's dad.
There it is.
I like that. I thought that you were going to say they were going with, you know, like the he hate me. The XFL came up with the nicknames and things got a little cray-cray.
Well, I'm sure there's going to be a couple of guys who didn't do this well and pick some stupid names to put back there. But there's been and then there's also guys who just still have Gardner on the back.
Yeah.
It's like you don't have, you got nothing to put back there.
They're not forcing these guys to pick a nickname. They are encouraging them to pick a nickname, but you won't be forced. But yeah, he hate me, probably the best all time.
I think to take it another step further, what they should do is, you know, if you are a first or second year player, kind of the young buck, the guys on the team get to pick your name.
I like that. Right. That would get cray cray.
Add a little creativity to it, and we get to know exactly who's who.
Yeah, man.
And what's going on in the clubhouse?
You remember any of the best nicknames you had given teammates?
Oh yeah, we gave one guy named Cheese. You know, as you guys know, there's a specific odor that comes to mind. we got the shower pill.
Oh.
You know, nobody ever wants to be the shower pill guy.
I don't know what that is, and I don't want to know. So let me ask you a serious question, Sean, because we were discussing this last hour, because the LSU quarterback had to break down the backsides of his two competing centers yesterday. Were you ever complimented on your surface area by one of your NFL quarterbacks?
I don't know that I was ever complimented on that. It was much more of a complaint about why is it so wet. Matter of fact, my quarterback Eli used to request that I change my game pants at halftime because, you know, I'm a sweater. And,
yeah.
You know, in a hot game, you know, things would get a little wet down there, and so, you know, on a three-step drop, you know, he'd say, "Look, I'm having a hard time gripping the ball because you're just soaking everything." So he didn't like the sweaty balls.
Yeah, you're a little moist down there. I got you. And it wasn't because it wasn't like Mark Schlereth where he was going to the bathroom on himself.
No, I wasn't stinky.
Yeah,
you know, he stinks.
Right.
You know, I was clean, but it was just sweat. You know, the worst part about it is my poor equipment guy Eddie Skiba. He was the one that had to help me take the pants off and put the new ones on because you can't take your cleats off.
Right.
So you're doing this, you know, a grown man standing in his jock strap and cleats spatted up because you can't take them off trying to put on new game pants.
And man, those equipment managers, they don't get enough credit for the stuff they have to deal with.
Life.
All right, I have too many follow up questions. Here's one of them. So does he have to cut the pants off you then?
No, they just he had to help kind of guide him over the cleats, but you know, getting them off was not the issue. It was getting the new pants on over the cleats, which was a little bit of a challenge, especially when my hands were all taped up with gloves on.
And you only have a small amount of time there at halftime. It's not like these college halftimes where you have half an hour, which they're changing Thank you.
Yeah, there's no room for error.
Yeah.
Especially for poor Eddie. Don't want to lose your balance or anything down there.
Well, hey, speaking of the Giants, a lot of people are picking them to be the front runners in the NFC East and also getting to the Super Bowl. What are your thoughts on your former team? They are stacked on D and on offense.
Yeah, you know what? I've been at practice a couple times in this last week, and it's funny. There is such a quiet excitement over there, and nobody really wants to say what you just said, you know, because it's kind of that old, like, hey, look, let's not jinx anything. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. But they are really excited about where they are, some of the pieces they've added this offseason. Brandon Marshall's made an instant impact, and Evan Ingram, their first-round pick, their tight end from Ole Miss, he has been phenomenal. He looks even better than anybody imagined. You know, he's running routes like a receiver. He's breaking away from guys. He caught a touchdown pass the other day in the red zone, one-on-one against the safety. He just kind of made a little move at the line that you know, you would expect a 4 or 5 year vet to make, and he's already doing it. So offensively, you know, two things that they struggled with last year was their run game and their red zone offense. And they've really done some great things offensively to help out with that red zone production. Brandon Marshall can climb the ladder in the red zone. And I think Eli's really excited. And the defense, their secondary looks phenomenal too. It's really hard to gauge. They go back and forth in practice. The defense wins a couple drills and then the offense bounces back. I think they're really making each other better. But the Giants, they have three starting corners with Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, with Eli Apple, and with Janoris Jenkins. So when they go to their nickel defense, they're a tough out. And I think there's a lot of excitement when you think about how well this defense played. Yes, the Dallas Cowboys won the division last year at 13-3, but they lost twice to the Giants. So two of their three losses were in the division to the G-men, and the reason why is because the Giants' defense stopped Ezekiel Elliott. So that right there is, you know, got everybody pretty excited. You know, I know Eli's fired up because he's got some studs. I mean, we didn't even talk about Sterling Shepard or Odell Beckham. You know, the funny thing is at practice, the last couple of years, all everybody's been talking about is Odell. Now it's kind of like, hey, you know what? He doesn't have to be everything to this offense.
There you go. And you hear that, Sheldon Richardson? They like Brandon Marshall over there, the New York Giants, unlike your dumbass.
Well, he was the one driving 120 miles an hour?
143.
Yeah. Oh, 143.
Yeah.
Oh, right. So, you know, he's very credible.
Sean O'Hara of the NFL Network with us here on Gio and Jones on CBS Sports Radio. Sean, this the beginning of the move to full-time officials, do you think this actually addresses the issues on the field that you see with the officials going on right now?
I don't know. I don't know if being full-time is going to change the human element of officiating. You know, I think they have a tough job. You know, they're kind of like offensive linemen. You know, nobody really pays attention until you screw up. I think that they make a lot of really good calls in live game speed. I don't know if calling them full-time now is going to change a whole lot. You know, I think that the guys, they work hard at their craft, and they you know, they spend a lot of time, you know, kind of honing that skill, and you know, just like players, they have kind of a training camp where they go out and kind of, you know, retrain their eyes and work on that skill. So I know some of them want to be full-time because they want to, you know, they want to disperse that image of, oh, we're just part-time. Some of the guys, you know, they like wearing two hats, but I think we're always going to have those plays, and you know, we see it in other sports too, where, you know, look, I can't believe that guy called that a strike. You know, it's clearly a ball. You know, and you're going to have a judgment call where, was it a catch? Was it not a catch? You know, was it pass interference? Was it not pass interference? So, as long as you have that human element, there's still going to be some gray area. But I think you have to keep some of that because it is sport, and I think that sometimes that's part of the game.
So then are you not in favor of more replay to get more calls right? Do you think we have a good system right now?
I like getting the calls right. You know, I think that when you think about how much money people are paying to go to the game and to watch the game and how much is at stake, you know, I think the most important thing is to get it right. You know, and I know people are, you know, worried about the speed of the play and the game of play. I don't think you should review every single play, but, you know, if it's a big play, I think there should be – you know, some discretion that, hey, you know what, this is a big play in the big part of the game. I mean, if it's first quarter, hey, look, we're not going to dwell on it. But if it's in the fourth quarter and it's a big call and it's questionable, you know, I'm okay with, hey, look, let's stop the game for 90 seconds and let's get it right so that we don't ruin somebody's season, you know, if it's an impactful game, especially if it's a postseason game.
Talking to Sean O'Hara, longtime NFL offensive lineman, NFL Network analyst, currently here on Geo and Jones, CBS Sports Radio. Sean, we were discussing earlier Kevin Colbert, who was the GM there at Pittsburgh, and he was basically criticizing Le'Veon Bell, who they've tendered $12 million to for this upcoming season. Of course, Le'Veon wanted, like all of us, wanted a long-term deal. Didn't get that. As far as your experience with teammates that have held out, how did that affect your team, and how did you approach it as a teammate? Of course, we all know the rule of not getting into someone else's money business, but how did you approach it?
Well, it is tough. You know, you always want to, you know, we started off the show talking about your brothers. And, you know, look, when you're in a locker room and you're on a team, he's a brother. And so you don't want to, you know, you don't want to meddle in his business with that. And you understand that we're all, you know, as players, you're all one play away from it all being over. You want everybody to get theirs. But I think it is tough. It's tough when it's a guy like Le'Veon Bell who you're all counting on, you know, and my concern if I was a player for the Steelers is, hey, you know, I hope he comes in shape. I hope there's no rust because, you know, we got to hit the ground running. And you never know as a veteran, is this my last year with this team? Is this my last year in the NFL? So you want to make everything count. You know, I think for Le'Veon, it's probably tough. I know he wants to be out there. He wants to play. But also, you know, he's been hurt the last couple of years. You know, so for him to come rush back and go to training camp and go do preseason games, I don't think he's, you know, chomping at the bit to that. The fact that he's not actually under contract because he hasn't signed it kind of gives him that opportunity. If he was under contract, he would have had to have been there or he would have been getting fined. So this is kind of a perfect storm for him and his situation. You know, I don't think, you know, if me as an offensive lineman, if they were going to franchise me and they said we're going to pay you $12 million, I would have signed it yesterday. but I think that, you know, the long-term contract, everybody wants that. You know what? Guess what? Look at Kirk Cousins. He's handled it greatly. You know, the way that you handle that one-year deal, I think for Le'Veon, the Steelers, they take care of their guys. You know, Kevin Colbert has done a good job of taking care of the players and making sure that they feel wanted, that they understand the business side of it is part of it too. But I think Le'Veon will show up. I think he'll be there. He understands what this franchise tag means and that, you know what, if he has another good year, he's going to get paid.
All right, I asked you about the NFC, and the Giants are definitely going to be the bell cow heading into the season. Who do you like out of the AFC other than the Patriots?
Yeah, the Patriots are, you know, you can pencil them in. You know, I tell you, I think the Houston Texans are intriguing. You know, we just saw Deshaun Watson for the first time, and, you know, I look at the Texans as they're that team that looks good in the playoffs, I mean, in the regular season, and then they show up the playoffs, and on prime time, they just kind of pee down their leg. And Deshaun Watson is kind of that guy that has played his best football on the big stage, in the national championship game, you know, against Alabama in college. So he kind of shows up and brings his best in those moments. That's kind of the piece that they've been missing down there. So, you know, I'm very interested to see how they shape up. You know, and we just got done talking about Pittsburgh. You know, look, Pittsburgh is loaded on offense. You know, I think without Le'Veon Bell in that playoff game last year against the Patriots, you know, we saw a different offense. I think that game would have been different if Le'Veon was healthy. I think the way that their offensive line played in the second half of the season last year, you know, they were one of the best O-lines. The way they ran the football, the way they were protecting Ben. So really defensively, if Pittsburgh defense can step up and improve, especially in the secondary, and they're going to be a tough team.
You can follow Sean O'Hara on Twitter at SeanO'Hara60. And tonight on NFL Network, you can watch the Broncos and the Bears live tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern. There are 7 total preseason games tonight. Sean, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it. Hopefully you have you on again soon.
All right, brothers.
Thanks,
we
brother.
Radio hug on the way out. That is Sean O'Hara, longtime Giant and Brown, now at the NFL Network. Again, at Sean O'Hara 60 on Twitter. Tonight, Broncos and Bears at Eastern NFL Network. And then tomorrow, a doubleheader, the Giants and the Steelers at 7, Niners and Chiefs at 10 p.m. Eastern. Final timeout. When we come back, we will play the game that is now sweeping America. Who's older, Carson Palmer or Byron Leftwich? Google away. It's Gio and Jones on CBS Sports Radio.
Guns N' Roses are coming to a town near you. Listen to Tiki and Tierney for your chance to win tickets exclusively on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
So an interesting exchange yesterday at Arizona Cardinals training camp.
It was a fight.
Was there?
I'm asking.
No, it was not really a fight. It was presented to us by somebody as a fight, but it was lighthearted back and forth.
It was a big argument.
Because Carson Palmer didn't think that he was older than his quarterback coach, Byron Leftwich, and a reporter had asked him about that, so they kind of went back and forth, and then they Googled it, and lo and behold, Carson Palmer is older than Byron Leftwich.
Yeah, by about 18 days, I believe
it is. Oh, there you go.
And they were both in the same draft, so he thought they were probably similar. He was younger, but no, your position coach is older or younger than you.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to thinking, is Josh McDaniel, I thought maybe he would be younger than Tom Brady, but he's 1 year older. Josh McDaniel is 41, I believe.
Oh,
Brady, of course, is 40.
Is he? I didn't realize that. That wasn't in the news
at
all.
Contemporary.
Last week.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't in the news. That's why you come to Gio and Jones for the news.
Exactly.
We do the digging for you sometimes.
The other day, I was reading, you know how I record the little draft capsules for your draft show?
Taco Charlton.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I was asked to help our friends at Tiki and Tierney
read
little intros to their NFL training camp two-a-day segments.
Uh-huh.
So I get to the Rams one,
yep.
And it says 31-year-old head coach Sean McVay, and I'm just like, that can't be right.
Yep.
A, because it seems too young, and B, I don't trust Mike Samter, who produces Tiki and Tierney and writes those things to use correct English and or facts.
So I missed the gnome.
And I'm like, I think 34 seems to be the right number, not 31. So I boom, 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 boom on the computer, and there it is, Sean McVay, 31, and then I punch the computer.
Why?
Because, I mean, nothing.
Jealous?
Yeah, well, I'm not jealous that he's the head coach of the Rams. I am frustrated and disappointed in myself that I am 6 years his senior, and I'm basically a grad assistant still, and he's the head coach.
In due time, my son. In due time.
Yeah.
You just keep plugging away.
Oh, thank you, Dad.
That's what you have to
Uncle
do.
Brian.
Keep plugging away. It's going to happen for you.
Yeah?
Yes. Eventually, the sun shines on a dog's ass, eventually, or a center's ass.
Fair point.
Yeah, you know what? I'm really disappointed that I asked Sean O'Hara that question because now it was already a gross subject, but I really didn't think to get. Well, I sweat a lot, and Eli made me change my pants mid-game.
Well, you would imagine everyone's sweaty. It's a football game. You're expending energy. You have 20 pounds of equipment on. Everyone's sweaty. You're all soaked. You get water or Gatorade over there on the sideline. You drip. You're soaked. And that makes the pants and everything even more difficult, or heavier. I should say not more difficult, but definitely heavier. So why are you surprised that he?
I just didn't want to think about Eli dropping back with a drenched football.
I hope
drenched
it happens in the every snap.
Rump sweat of Sean O'Hara.
Well,
and let's get to throw some baby powder on there. That's what a man does in the summer.
Then the ball would slip out of his hand.
Nah, not on Eli, but you sprinkle it in your jock and throw the pants on and try and alleviate some of that dampness.
Now we know why quarterbacks are wearing the gloves, huh?
You know what?
Maybe not just cold weather.
Maybe they don't want to say it out loud and embarrass their center, but yeah, they put that left hand, the top hand in the thing. That's what's touching
the thing, yes.
Put the top hand in the formation. It's the one making contact, so you glove it. So there's a barrier between you and that funk. That's what it is.
That funk. An undercarriage funk.
But you just figured out.
Yeah. There you go. That's what I'm here for.
Not the things we really need, like rap music information.
No, I can't help you with that.
Dynamics of the center snap.
Billy and the Stamp, I can't help you with.
That Calvin Harris is 33 years old, bogus, to make you feel even worse about yourself.
33, get 66 mil a year. Whew, good to be the king. And doesn't have to spin anything. Nothing. No spinning the records, no mixing and scratching the records like they used to do.
So, but here's what I don't understand. Now, if I go to one of these shows, like, does he have Katy Perry on a track that sings over these songs?
Yes, he won't be there with them.
So he's not doing anything at his show then. He's just hitting play on an MP3 that has the song in it?
Yeah, man.
And then when these guys, like, live mix...
Go ahead.
Like, so every time I hear them, they're going to play something different? Or do they have, like...
They play something different.
Do they have
a catalog.
But they have things that they repeat. So, like, they have a song or, a, you know, some kind of...
They have hits.
...package. Right, so, like, so he's only doing that once. He's only making that mix once. So whatever he wants to call it, you know, symphony in G minor... That exists, and he just hits play, and there it goes. He's not live redoing it every single time, is he?
Some stuff he is.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, when I go to see... if I went to see Imagine Dragons...
Right.
They're playing their song.
Right.
But if his song's all electronic, does he just do it once and go, that's good?
No, he may play one of his hits, but then he's doing new stuff right there in the moment, on site.
And that gets you $66
million. $66 million. Yeah. The dude Afrojack, 16 million.
And he knows Katy Perry.
And he knows Katy.
And if he was Diplo, he would know Katy Perry. Yep. Or did at one point and forgot it. Because, you know, whatever.
Well, you know.
Thanks to Dennis Dodd and Sean O'Hara's sweaty butt. Tomorrow, God knows what, on a Friday edition of Gio and Jones on CBS Sports Radio.